How was it for you when you first went up to Vince when you left WCW? Was it hard to adjust to them, to that environment?
It was a little hard.
Because you know, it's different, you know.
WWE was such a different environment than I had been accustomed to. You know, we both know how disjointed WCW could be. Pardon me. And they seem to be a lot more organization in WWE.
No question about that.
The nice thing about, for me, WWE was a throwback to working for Cowboy in Oklahoma, was that you didn't have to worry about getting an answer. If you needed a question answered, you knew the one guy you could go to get it done. And Vince was the guy.
Right.
Still is the guy. So, it was different.
Yeah.
I wasn't the most popular guy there coming in because I had, you know, looked to be one of the voices of the enemy.
Right.
And so a lot of guys were gave me the cold shoulder.
Yeah.
Here's an example. Lord Alfred Hayes is one of the nicest guys in the world.
Yes, he is.
You know, God bless him and all that. Funny guy. I loved being around him. Loved his laugh. You know, he liked his wine.
Had a gigantic dick, I understand.
Yeah, he was allegedly hung like a Shetland pony. But be that as it may, he wouldn't even hardly speak to me at all. And Monsoon saw him give me the cold shoulder. Monsoon took him for a walk. And on their little stroll around the studio there, 120 Hamilton, Monsoon explained to Alfred that he was making himself look bad. He said, this guy's been in the business for 20 years. He's paid his dues. He's a territory guy. And you should be ashamed of yourself for treating him like shit for no reason. Because of where he last worked. He's with us now. So Monsoon had a way of doing that. He did that with a lot of guys on my behalf, unbeknownst to me. But the Lord Alfred one I knew, because Alfred came to me later that day and apologized for being a prick. He said, I talked to Gino, Monsoon. And he opened my eyes to your situation. And I don't know why I acted that way, but I feel I'm embarrassed. So that's how it worked out, you know.
Yeah. Monsoon was a great person, wasn't he?
Yeah. One of the best.
One of the best.
I just loved the guy. I wasn't working there when he passed away.
Right.
But I still went to his funeral in Jersey. So, you know, I love the guy. We would, on days he would come to do voiceovers, and the edits weren't ready. There's more than one occasion where we would go up to Foxwoods Casino. Because he loved gambling.
Oh, he was high roller.
Big time gambling. He pulled out a wad of cash one day. He had a great big rubber band around it. It was a big ass wad. It looked like a roll of Charmin, only it was green. Huge. And he and I and Enid were riding together. If we had these cameras in that era,
yeah,
with those guys, well, that's money.
You're not kidding.
So Enid says, God dang, how much money you got there? I said, enough. You know, kind of talk around it. But he had over 10 grand in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what are you going to do with all that money? He said, well, brain. I might want to buy something. He just says, what? A ranch? They on and on all day. Just boogie, man.
Yeah.
Great natural ping. You know, great chemistry. So Monsoon was my guy that helped break the ice with all the other staff members. He was another one because he and I hit it off right away.
Right.
And Mean Gene. So those three veterans, who all were in my wheelhouse as far as you do broadcasting, as do I. So there could be some competition feel there, but there wasn't.
Please report it ahead.
So I had a... Those three guys will always be indebted to for that. They're just wonderful. I felt like... I'll tell you what, it was a funny deal. A lot of people didn't realize that I had gone to work for WWE within the company until the production meeting at WrestleMania in Vegas at WrestleMania 9. So it was massive,
please,
you know... Massive production meeting for this big show, outdoors, and then the elephants and Heena and all that stuff. Yeah. It's my first show working with Bobby and Macho Man, which was an adventure. Randy's such a talented guy, but boy, his lack of trust in people.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it probably came from working in the old Memphis area. Right.
It might have come in the territory days.
Yeah, right.
And his dad was a big influence on Randy, so maybe he had bad experiences. A lot of guys did in that era.
Sure.
So, I was at a production meeting. I guess he's leading the production meeting as always. And he introduces me. Stand up, Jim. Before the JR days, and he's joining our team. He's going to be broadcasting WrestleMania tonight with Bobby and Randy, which meant that leaves Monsoon out. And so when he introduced me, it would be like, I don't know, just the coldest, emptiest hall over the room. Just very, very uncomfortable. You can see eyes kind of looking at you, and the guys mumbling with the vaccine. Where's Chino? Where's Gorilla? You take a Gorilla spot?
Sure.
It's not exactly like I got hired there under the auspices I was going to work WrestleMania. That was never discussed.
Sure.
So anyway, Monsoon did the opening for WrestleMania 9 and introduced me and pitched it down to me. And he went back to the room. He was sick. That's why he didn't work the show. He didn't work the show because I was Vince's choice over Gorilla, necessarily. It was the fact that the Gorilla was very ill that few days of WrestleMania. Then, not too long after that, about a day, 3 or 4 days, Heenan, Lord Alfred, and myself flew to Sheffield, England. In 93 to do a live TV show. We're doing rehearsals at the arena in the afternoon, just, you know, getting our timing, rehearse the cold open, rehearse the open, that's ideal, same normal stuff. And I said something to the effect of, on this little WWE show, on that open, on tape, I mean, on the rehearsal. Hello again, everybody, and welcome to WCW's And seriously, that's how the wrestling business works. Most people, it's this loving gossip and spreading the bullshit, mm-hmm. like we see on social media.
Mm-hmm.
It took less than 2 hours or so for Vince to hear that I screwed up in rehearsal and said WCW. In rehearsal, not on the air, Linda McMahon even teased me about it. It had been a topic of discussion. Are you shitting me? We're rehearsing. So anyway, funny how that works out. That, you know, they used to say telephone, telegraph, telewrestler.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And our fans, because they got so much information now online, and unfortunately many of them believe that everything they read pretty much is true. Oh, there's smoke, there's fire, by God.
It's amazing how much shit you see online and on social media that's just not true.
Right.
That's just a fucking lie.
I'll say something on a podcast, and do a guest of somebody's podcast. And I did Ariel Helwani's podcast the other day. He's got a real good show, does MMA, mostly. he works for ESPN, got his own thing going too. So he's a very bright guy. So he asked a couple of questions, you know, what was the difference, the big difference between Tony Khan and Vince McMahon? And I said, Tony drinks White Claws and Vince drinks red wine or Dewar's scotch. And I said, it's a generational thing. Those White Claw-like liquors are trendy right now.
Yeah.
Everybody's making them, right?
Right, they haven't been around that long.
Right. Yeah. So it's the younger younger demo likes the White Claw, apparently,
right,
a lot. I know I tease out all the wrestlers at AEW. You know, you guys are trying to get close to Tony's dairy air, but you got to consume that goddamn White Claw. I don't know if it's worth it.
Well, you know, everybody's making, Budweiser even makes a seltzer now.
Yeah,
it's, you're right, it is trendy.
So I said that, so anyway, somebody goes online to get clicks and says, Ross talks about major differences between McMahon and Khan. White Claw and Scotch. That's sort of, are you kidding? It's just to get everybody to click on their site and see something, you know, like, oh, that's not really good.
Right. Yeah, and the right story is based on your podcast.
I think our news media influences so many other facets of our life as far as communications are concerned that it seems to me that people enjoy the negative, the controversial, the unsettling issues more than they do, hey, here's a great story from the Newswire. You know, nothing. There's a couple of guys on Twitter, Rex Chapman does a lot of stuff with dogs and kids that are funny.
Yes, I've seen, I follow Rex Chapman.
I do too, I follow him. Former Kentucky basketball player.
Yeah.
Had some issues. Work through, and well, I like that site because it's always funny, it's always uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, the other night when I said something on TV about at least our people are here or are not confined to a plexiglass thing, that's what WWE has been doing lately, having guys at ringside. I don't know why they weren't doing it all along, but you know, they saw us do it, they saw that it worked. So they're trying it and put their own spin on it, which is fine. But the plexiglass, I thought, looked a little hokey. But just me.
Yeah.
So I mentioned on the air with us the other night, you know. And man, it's like I started a little revolution. Well, I can't believe I was so bitter. You know, I'm so bitter. I'm so bitter that I ad-libbed a line I thought might get a laugh. And those that knew chuckle, and those that didn't know can just say, chalk it up to another one of JR's senior moments. He's not the same as he used to be. You know that. He's just not the same, Tony.
Nobody is,
yeah. Yeah. But see, someone starts so fucking far ahead of the other guy behind him that you can fall back a little bit and still be okay. That's my attitude.
Yeah.
Egocentric as it is. Hey, we, you know, how many people would not believe how disregarded in general announcers were until just like the last few years in wrestling. Take it for granted, right?
Oh my God, absolutely. Absolutely. I really think you changed a lot of that. I do.
Wow.
Because you and Jerry were so instrumental in the success of the WWE and the Attitude Era. Realize how valuable you were.
Well, you know, you finally got to get recognized. If you're in the television business, the television broadcasters are kind of important.
Yes, they are.
To, component to have and have the right spot.
Tell the story. Yeah, the good news is we're having fun now, though. You know.
Oh God. There's a difference. You know, here's a dilemma that I'm in at times if I'm trying to be sensitive, and I can't be sensitive, but not very often. If I say anything about the fact that AEW has a much more positive atmosphere in which to work, the key decision makers are younger and they're approachable, especially our owner. He will talk and let anybody on the roster pitch ideas. And he loves the talents to come up with their own stuff because he's smart enough to know that if you contribute to your creative and you got a piece of the action, you're going to do more to get it over than anybody else, because the same massive ego that got you in this business is the same massive ego that's not going to let you look bad. But if you say something like that, which for me, oh my God, is JR bitter or what? My God, he said they had a better atmosphere. That's a real indictment now.
Or Shivani is such a suck up because he loves Tony Khan so much. Well, genuinely I do. I mean, genuinely I'd do anything for him because of how approachable he is and how...
Tony, our generation understands and respects the people in our lives to help make it better. Right. And we're appreciative of it. There's a younger generation out there that don't have the same attitude. They're the kind of guys that, you know, were born on third base. They woke up and thought they hit a triple. It's all them. Right. You know, you're lucky I work for you type dude.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So I do like, I don't see anything wrong with being loyal to people paying.
No.
You know, poor old Corny hit somebody the other day, so I showed me. They just couldn't wait to share the news. Did you see what Jim Cornette said about you? Nope, not yet. I think you're fixing to tell me.
Yeah. Well, I did the post show. You know, after the live show, I do like a 30-minute post show back there with Jeff Jones.
Yeah.
On our YouTube channel.
Right.
And of course, see it as you've done it before. I mean, the questions come at you so fast. At least I'm looking at all the questions. One guy said, did you hear what Jim Cornette said about the Stadium Stampede match? And my answer was, no, and I don't give a shit.
Well, I mean, yeah. Neither one of us hate Cornette.
No, I like Cornette.
Yeah.
I've always respected him. I've been friends. But I don't care about what he says. No. It has no impact on my life.
And schedule-wise, it's hard to listen to a whole lot of other people's podcasts.
Yeah, that's right.
Other than the Podfathers stream of opinions.
Well, you know, a lot of people listen to our podcast driving, you know, truck drivers or, you know, delivery men going through the day and things like that. So,
Conrad is, he's very resilient for a great big guy like that. I mean, he's got a great work ethic in the sense of, if you just look at how much he records weekly, I mean, you know.
No, five of them,
and sometimes to get ahead,
yes.
Like with me, when I came to Florida for the month of May in Jacksonville, you know, we recorded the whole month of May in advance. And then if there's any news that breaks, Conrad will get it in.
Right.
He'll do the, because the commercials weren't all booked yet, so he can read the commercials.
Yeah.
But all the body of the shows are all done.
Right.
But he does that with a lot of guys. Yeah. Then we've added that ad-free thing where a lot of folks like watching this or something around that.
Right. Good stuff.
I'm telling you, you know, both grew up with kids, big wrestling fans. Somehow, some way, if this service and podcasts in general were available when I was a young fan, teen, I would have found some way, somehow. I got to go mow an extra lawn, do extra chores, get the extra money, something. I would have figured out a way to buy that.
Yeah.
It's just too good stuff, funny, enlightening.
Because you were like, the only thing I had back in the day was the magazines. We called them the After magazines back then.
Yeah.
But they had two of them, the Wrestler and Pro Wrestling Illustrated, well, I don't know what it was called, but I remember the Wrestler was one of them.
Well, I remember that.
Yeah.
I used to read Ring Wrestling.
Okay.
Nat Fletcher. He wrote about boxing. Uh-huh. And so he'd have his magazine, boxing news, boxing and wrestling news. So the last part of the book or the magazine was maybe 4 or 5 pages of pro wrestling.
Yep.
But the other magazine I really liked, and I had to drive a 30-mile round trip out of state to get it, was Wrestling Review. It was one of the first ones. Wrestling Review. You know, and of course, I'm believing every word I'm reading. And you?
Oh, absolutely.
Those magazines are considered, wrestling magazines, considered just as reliable as, because they're well written.
Right.
But honestly, they're plausibly true.
Right. I can remember, you know, you'd read the magazine, and you'd see about, like, one thing I remember for sure, Baron Von Raschke, the AWA, right?
Yeah. Jimmy Raschke from Nebraska.
And I remember they would announce these guys coming in just kind of casually, you know. And Bob Caudle one day said, "Fans, coming soon to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Baron Von Raschke." And I went, "Holy shit. I've only seen pictures of him, right?" And we were on the phone, our friends calling each other.
Jimmy Raschke from Nebraska.
Baron Von Raschke's coming to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And he's just like those guys, too, that you only saw, you know.
He's a
superstar Billy Graham. Oh, my God, he's coming in. Jesus. That was magical stuff.
Jim Raschke's a good man.
Yes, he is.
Good man. Good. Solid. See, that's what... There are enough guys like him in a small business populated with a lot of characters.
Right.
There are enough Baron Von Raschke's of the character and the intellect and responsibility that made the business help build a foundation, make it strong.
Yeah. I guess he's still living up in the Northeast or the North.
He lives in Minnesota.
He's still living in Minnesota, okay.
Last I heard, I used to see him in Iowa in July every year. They had the big Luthez National Wrestling Hall of Fame weekend. It was a great event. Anybody that's never been to Waterloo and seen and participated, the access to the talents that are there is unparalleled. There's no long lines. There's no herding cattle. It's beautiful. And then we had the banquet. I haven't seen the banquet for several years. I missed a couple of years lately because of work. And then, of course, this year, because of the pandemic, we had no banquet and event. But I really enjoyed going there. The fans, if they haven't seen it or been a part of it, Google that in Waterloo. And because I promise you, if you get a chance to go, it's really cool. The other, I like going to the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Yeah.
I'm a lifetime member of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Yeah. What the hell out of
it. So am I, too.
Right. Did you just get a film member lately?
Yeah.
Good. Good for you.
Yeah. And then I sent him some more money, too.
Good.
Because it's just the right thing to do, right? I mean, it is.
I agree.
Yeah.
But how many guys in our wrestling business will do that? There's guys that have made a lot of money in wrestling who give one dime to help support their peers.
I tell you who will, though. Jericho's like that.
Oh, yeah. He is. Jericho's he's got his act together.